not hit record before, and that's not good. All right, little intro, and then I'll bring you in.
Okay, cool.
And we're back, Straw Ripe Show podcast, on a Wednesday or Thursday, depending upon where you are in the world. We appreciate you tuning in once again. As we get into Thursday, we talk instruction, and I've got one of the best coaches joining me over across the pond right now. He's about ready to go to bed, and I've got him in his studio, and I'm sure this is everything he wants to do right before he goes to bed, is talk more putting, because that's what he does 24 hours a day with some of the best players in the world. Phil Kenyon, we've been trying to do this for a while. I appreciate you taking the time. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no pleasure. Glad we got around to it.
What do you got there in the, what do you got behind you there? Is that like your basement? I mean, you're not at work right now. I mean, you're at your home, right? Is this right here a little spare bedroom?
This used to be my garage. I converted it. One of the things that we did in lockdown was I was hitting balls in here with like a make do net, and then just one of the things that I wanted to do was I converted it into like a swing room at Cum Studio. So over here I've got my desk, and this is my place where I'll escape, catch up with a bit of work, and pound balls into a screen mindlessly.
I know you have a lot of players. You travel a ton on the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, LPGA Tour. I mean, it would probably take us 10 minutes to run through all the players that you work with. There's two of them that I do want to shed some light on here as we get into the podcast. Max Homa is one of them who I was talking yesterday on the podcast has really, you know, Phil, has become, I think, a very complete player now. And I think one of the areas that probably has caught up to the rest has been his putting, and you're his putting coach. If you had to whittle it down to, say, you know, one or two things, if that's possible with Max, what would you say he's kind of learned to do that has now elevated him into one of the premier players on the PGA Tour?
That's a tough one for me to really say, because I mean, I only started working with Max earlier this year, and it was actually at the Masters earlier this year where we started to work together. I mean, Mark Blackburn, who's his coach, is a really good friend of mine. I've known Mark for a number of years, even at the end of, I think it was last year, Mark was like, listen, I'd really like to work with Max. I think you could help him. And Mark really believes in Max, and he was like, listen, I think this kid is can go all the way, and I want to try and get a good team around him to really maximize what he's doing. So obviously I think Max bought into that, and I met him at the Masters this year, and then we started work. So there's a lot gone on before, you know. There's a lot to Max's journey, and I think Mark's been a really sort of big influence on Max and has helped him tremendously. I came in to help him just with his putting this year, and he wasn't a bad putter. I mean, I don't think he's, like, historically his stats have been horrendous, but he just wanted to improve his approach to it, and obviously he's got aspirations to get to the top of the game. So my job was to kind of come in and try and help him do that. And I think there's been a few changes. There's some aspects technically that I thought Max could kind of clean up, sort of understanding some of his biases a little bit better and where they come from. And I think a big gain very early on was to improve his green reading. And I think that sort of showed up quite early on, really, because at Wells Fargo, he won, put it really well. And I think the changes he's made into his green reading routine really kind of showed up that week. So I mean, I think at that level, you're trying to, it's small gains, isn't it? You know, marginal gains in lots of different areas. And I think like with Max's elements of technique, elements of green reading, elements of speed control, elements of improving the efficiency of your practice, things like that. And he's a great guy, really good to work with, very professional, works unbelievably hard. So hopefully if you, when you have those characteristics and then you put a good environment around that player and hopefully some good information, then they should improve.
Let's talk about his setup for me. I think he's kind of a good example. When I picture Max's setup, and correct me if I'm wrong, if he, you know, he's got a pretty conventional grip. His forearms, Phil, something I want to talk to you about. His forearms pretty soft, elbows maybe, you know, just kind of soft and tucked. They're certainly, you know, they're certainly not out. Right. Yeah. You know, do you kind of like the idea of the elbows, say, soft and even like the forearms matched up to that putter shaft as, you know, one plane, right? Like my forearms and the shaft are on the same plane versus, you know, one being higher than the other. I know that, you know, you look at Tiger, he certainly won maybe where that right forearm was a shade higher. There's others, but it does feel like maybe the majority, you know, I think of Luke Donald, forearms in line with that putter shaft. Is that something you like to see? Where do you go with that?
Well, I think it can really be player dependent. I mean, Max's trail forearm sits higher than his lead forearm. So his
higher
forearm. Yeah.
Touch higher. Okay.
Yeah. So I think it's really, really player dependent. And I think there's a lot of kind of myths in and around putting, which have been portrayed over the years, that, you know, you need to have perfect alignment. You know, your eye position's got to be here. And the reality is that, you know, people do it very, very differently. When you look at some of the best putters in the world, there are very few similarities. So I think it really is kind of trying to, at this level, trying to look at the nuances of what the player does and refine what they do and improve it. I mean, I, as a coach, I'll have preferences.
Yeah.
And now you're talking as a preference, would you like to see forearm and shaft alignment? I think within ballpark figures, like, yeah, you would. And when you look at Max, you could say that forearm and shaft is aligned. When you look closer, his actually trail forearm sits in a different alignment than his lead forearm. But when you grab the man off the street and the trail forearm's like this and the lead arm, then I think it's a great concept to have to match like forearm and shaft plane. But the deeper you go, there are a lot of variables and individual aspects.
Let's talk your preference for a second. Let's speak to the amateur golfer. Like you said, the guy off the street, like the right forearm gets high, right? You know, if I'm doing a clinic and I've got 10 people, I would say probably 6 to 7 of them, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to tell them to grip that right hand a touch more down to the side, soften that right arm, you know, versus being so dominant this way. The other thing I see, Phil, with it is, it feels like, you know, a lot of players, because they're trying to get their eyes over it, right? So if I was to come up here, they're trying to get their eyes over it. So they'll kind of get in snug. You know, they'll get in pretty snug, eyes over, and then, of course, their weight just kind of falls back. Very seldom do I see them, you know, so far away that they're top heavy, you know, out over their toes trying to get their eyes over it. So I see a lot of them, like, kind of in snug. You know, which kind of leads them to some of this too, versus do you like kind of balancing that for the amateur player? Like, hey, let's get an adequate distance where we have enough hip hinge and we've got a little room to operate. Like, how do you go about that, say, with the amateur?
Well, I think, you know, like posture is important there. I mean, you're talking about the trail arm position and the grip, and it's so easy to think that you know, the forearm gets out of position because of the grip. And a lot of the time, it's really more because of the shoulder position and people's posture. If you get very protracted, it's very easy then for your upper arm to be out and round. And then when you grip the club, you're going to get this arm out of position. So, and, you know, even now when I sit here, you know, I'm rounded. Right.
We've all got exactly.
So I think, you know, good posture, which comes from, you know, shoulder stability, shoulder positioning, you know, good hip hinge. I see a lot of, you know, posterior tilt of the pelvis, like, in, you know, like you say, when you're getting close, then you've got no room. So when you're talking like preferences and grabbing the man off the street, you can't beat a good setup.
Right.
And that stems from good posture. And then if you can get into good setup, good posture, then you allow athleticism, don't you? You allow yourself room to maneuver and coordinate the different segments. But if you set up poorly, I think it makes movement more complex. And people don't need complexity, they need simplicity. That's going to work, you know, because generally the average golfer doesn't have a ton of hand-eye coordination. Not, you know, when we compare it to, you know, these top players like you mentioned in Max and Matt.
Right.
So you need sort of efficiency in the setup and motion to help them.
The stroke itself, like the engine, this is one of the things you said that's interesting earlier is that obviously there's a lot of different ways when you look at the best players. If you go through the Hall of Fame, you're going to see a lot of different styles. What, Jack Nicklaus, one of the best putters of all time. You know, it's interesting. No one is telling anybody to get down in here, you know, like Jack did.
Yeah.
Who just, you know, took that to that alignment, dropped it down, crouched down, kind of to the side, opened up, and I don't know, almost looked like a bit of a piston action, right?
Yeah.
With the right arm. I mean, it's fascinating that's not really taught. And when you look at it from the full swing perspective and you look at like the Sam Sneeds of the world, the Ben Hogans and these guys, you know, that had this change of knee flex, this long fluid swing. We went through a period there in the swing where it was like, okay, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to turn the upper, not the lower. You know, these were some of the narratives, right?
Yeah.
Keep the right in the trailed knee flex. But now I think like through this 3D world and research and long drive competitions, those guys had it right. I mean, those guys were free, fluid motion, change of knee flex, move to the right, back to the left. And it's just like, don't complicate it. That's just kind of what they figured out how to do without all this research, without all this technology. So you look at Jack and this down, you know, to the side and some of these other interesting styles like Arnold Palmer, who was way down, crunched down in there. And I know the greens were slower and those kinds of things. Do you ever think about that? Like why, you know, there's no one putting like Jack in today's world?
I probably not as much as you by the sounds of it. But the reality is, I don't know why that's the case. I mean, why hasn't someone copied Jim Furyk? You know, God, he probably won as much cash as anyone on the PGA Tour and you know, major winner, multiple Ryder Cup winner, but no one sets out to copy his swing. And there are outliers, aren't there? But we never tend to copy outliers. So I think, yeah, I mean, instruction in some way has kind of evolved to, I guess, probably stop some of these outliers appearing. You know, I mean, if someone started to coach a young Jack Nicklaus, how much would they coach out of him now? That's a question that you'd have to ask. But I mean, ultimately, if Jack came for a lesson now, you wouldn't change any of it. I mean, I think I would hope that we start to, you know, as coaches, we understand, you know, the difference between idiosyncrasies and faults, and we're better at coaching the person, not the method. I mean, certainly like 20 years ago when I got into coaching, there was definitely like more methods. You could see that.
Yeah.
And I see that there's a now through the information that we've had, you know, the technology that's available, I think we're better at that as on the whole. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question.
Yeah,
I don't think about too much about why. I just try and like look at the players I've got to work with and try and think of ways of getting them better. But they, luckily for me, they didn't come to me putting like Jack Nicklaus, so I didn't have to consider whether to try and change, modify, or what to do with it.
What do you look at as like the engine? If you had to, and I know this can change from person to person, right? Like they're looking at their different styles, but you know, do you look at the putting stroke more as like a little pivot where it's this, you know, your shoulders are kind of moving it in this very subtle fashion? Obviously, we're not getting that lower body action going in the stroke, but it's kind of more shoulder, spine, you know, this kind of subtle piston action, or is it more of a kind of an arm, let the arms kind of move the shoulders? How do you, if you had to elevator pitch it from a, just kind of what you see and works with a lot of amateurs to get them moving in the right direction to control the putter head a little bit better, where do you go?
Well, I think you've got, if you break sort of putting stroke down into its simplest parts, you've got torso, arms, hands. You know, shoulders are a joint, wrists are a joint, and there's movement at and around the joint, and you're simply coordinating those segments. I mean, most people put primarily with their arms. You know, the whole idea that you put with your shoulders, I'm not quite sure what that actually means, because your shoulders are a joint. Very often people with that concept are actually just moving the shoulder joint. And it's their arms that are kind of, in essence, powering that. So you've got, you know, obviously torso is a big segment, you know, and that can be a huge driver for some people. But I would say most people have a blend of using torso, arms, hands. But it, more importantly, it's how you coordinate those. So if you look at someone like Rory, you know, Rory would be more of a wrist and arms and then torso. So how he moves those segments and the synchronization of those, how does that affect how the club moves? You know, if you look at someone like Matt Fitzpatrick, he's got a huge amount of rotation in his torso, both sides of the ball, but very symmetrical, very little arm movement. Okay, some wrist movement in the hand movement. So everyone's different. You know, that I've got a student of mine, Chris Wood, who's been a great putter, played Ryder Cup, been number one putter on the European Tour. And if you measure him against Matt Fitzpatrick on a 15-foot putt, Fitzy would have twice the amount of torso rotation than what Chris would. Chris would use his arms and his wrists, but not really use his torso. So his arms are kind of gliding past his torso. You know, the appendicular system of the arms kind of gliding more, you know, through his torso or past his torso. So everyone's a little different. I'd say where the average player struggles is there's not a lot of symmetry and synchronization across those segments, which then ultimately, because the club's at the end of that, it can make it hard to control the angle of the club face and the speed of the club head. So yeah. Like symmetry of movement, I think, is important. Definition of beauty is symmetry. So when I'm looking at a player, I'm always looking at the symmetry of that. If they're using the torso, what's the blend? You know, how much are they using it going back and through? You know, what's that blend of rotation and side bend? Looking at arm movement, how those arms are moving back and how they're moving through. And then again, wrist movements, how the wrist moves back, how that's moving through. And generally, I think issues in club face control or like speed control can often come through because of a lack of symmetry in that synchronization of those segments.
I think of Billy Horschel. He's got almost like a little wrist, and then it's kind of torso like Rory. It's almost like a bit of like a little hinge and hold, perhaps, right? Like his little wrist play, and then he kind of turns and hits it with the, with his
core. Billy would be pure like wrist and arms.
Wrist and arms. Wrist, arms. Not a lot of torso coming through.
No. Okay. Well, like if you think of and a lot of characteristics of people's putting, actually, you can see through their long game and short game. Like if I have a pound for every time a player said, oh, I do that in my short game, or my coach has me working on that in the long game, you know, I'd have a studio as good as yours. So you get a lot of similarities. If you think of like Rory in his golf swing, he'd have a lot of rotation and, you know, a lot of side bend. So like when you see his putting stroke, it can have a little bit of a hinge going back, arms travel. And then from here, it's all torso and side bend. So his lead arm is actually adducting into his torso. So that gives him kind of that block look that you see. And everyone thinks, so, you know, he pushes his putts, where, you know, that's not necessarily the case, but it gives you that like kind of lead arm blocking kind of look, because he really turns into that lead arm.
Right, right. Yeah.
So that, you know, and then you look at Billy, like, and Billy's a good putter from my understanding. You know, he's just like wrist and arms, and arms. Everyone moves differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just trying to like work out, what's your back put under pressure?
Mm-hmm. Like, right.
Do you push? Do you leave put short, long? And then how you're moving that club and the synchronization, coordination, what causes that pull or push or the overhit or the weak put, whatever it is. And then you're just trying to piece together, well, if I need to move it like this in order to square the club more easier, you know, control my speed easier, whatever it is.
Ricky's kind of wrist arms, right? Fowler, wrist arm. He's not a lot going on here.
Yeah, so he'd have some, like, if you looked, isolated the lead wrist, there'd be flexion in the lead wrist going back. And then you can see that the flexion is kind of held, and it's a little bit of a late going towards extension. Probably de-loss it slightly, and then extension past the ball. So there's less travel in the handle. A lot more travel in the club head, but yeah, there'd be more wrist motion in his stroke. So loads of flow. I mean, if you look at strokes that are fairly like that look rigid, or could be described as rigid, very often the torso dominated strokes.
Yeah.
If I just stood there and moved my torso, didn't move my arms, it would look like rigid. Where when you start to, you know, have a little bit of torso, a little bit of arm movement, a little bit of wrist movement, it kind of adds a little bit of flow and
You
know, synchronization. And
well, I think you said something like it's okay to take a little flexion, then to some like the idea is like keep your hands solid, don't move them. And I think like, you know, then it becomes tight, and then the arms get rigid, and then it becomes that wooden, and then we're like up and down, and so. Now, obviously, we're not coming in and just, you know, like collapsing and doing that either. But I think a little like the grip pressure and the softness in the wrists and the arms, having that little flow with the shoulders. Yeah, I tend to like that. And just for me personally, as you were talking, like, I feel like when I am not putting well is when I am too tight in my grip pressure, and I do feel too torso oriented. And that's when I feel like my head starts to back up a little too much. And then when I lighten it, I feel more arms and wrists. I know my torso is participating, but I don't feel like it is. I feel more arms, wrist stroke, and the suppleness of my wrist. It almost, in some ways, like it almost feels like I'm in less control, but I'm hitting better putts, you know, because I'm just softer and supple, not so, you know, my brain's equating this to being, that's control. And the reality is it's not, because I'm all over the place and I can't hit the center of the face. So so it's interesting in saying that. I want to talk about the stroke a second. I always tell the story, Phil, when I was working at Golf Channel and Jordan Spieth was on his run. This was back in 2017. And he was making everything that he looked at, you know, and it was like, we've never seen it before. I mean, he was just like 18 feet. It's like, okay, it's good. Pick it up, right? I mean, he's just making everything. And when he won, I can't remember what tournament it was, they asked me to break down his putting stroke and what he does. So I went into his putting stroke.
Yeah.
And I talked about how his ratio in his putting stroke was a 2-to-1 ratio. It was longer back than through. You know, he had a bigger back stroke and then he had a shorter forward stroke. And I just said, I just labeled it 2-to-1. I said, it may not be exactly 2-to-1, but it's a little longer back than it is through. And I said, when you look at that, and what's unique about it is Jordan has to put some energy in the putter head going back. It's a bit brisk going back. There's some energy in the putter head going back. And then it's kind of cruise control, if you will, to the finish. So I did that breakdown. And then in hour two of that show, Phil, Lydia Ko is in the studio and I had to interview her. And they're like, well, just do putting because she's a wonderful putter. I was like, great. So I get Lydia in there and I said, hey, Lydia, talk to me about your stroke. Like, what do you like to do with your putting stroke? She goes, well, you know, I take it back kind of short and my follow through is longer. You know, so she's like, she goes, I said, wait a minute. I said, you're telling me your forward stroke is longer than your back stroke. She's like, yeah. I said, it's like a 1-to-2. I was like, perfect. You know, hour one, Spieth, 2-to-1.
Yeah.
Hour two, Lydia Ko, 1-to-2. Right. Yeah. I mean, those stroke profiles are different. Just based off of what I just said there, just talk about what that might mean to my audience and perhaps where it may apply, if that's not too loaded of a question.
No, it's a great question because, again, you know, I would have preferences as a coach in terms of how you should try and generate speed. And the reality is you'll have players who are outliers who control speed really well, doing it very differently. And Lydia's obviously, you know, been a great player and has been a good putter over the years. You do see a lot of good players. I mean, Lydia's profile, would it be sort of short to longer, typically would generate a lot of acceleration in and around impact.
Right.
And so the club would be picking up speed very quickly. And then if you looked at, say, Jordan's profile, which is kind of a longer, more loaded backswing, that would typically kind of create less acceleration around impact. So that speed is going to be maybe closer to being more constant. Or you might even have some deceleration. And obviously, like over the years, that's been like a no-no. Oh, you can't decelerate, you've got to accelerate.
Right.
Which is a widely perpetuated sort of myth. Now, from my sort of my experience over the years, just like measuring players and seeing what they do, you get a lot of great putters that actually decelerate. And I would say I'd see more like good putters with great sort of speed control that have very, very minimal acceleration to then deceleration. So it'd be not Lydia's profile, more Jordan's profile. But the ball only knows speed. It doesn't know acceleration. So as long as you can, whatever way you do it,
yeah,
as long as you can match your intended speed, then you can control how far the ball goes. It's just whether you can do that and whether your technique or the way that you're doing it is allowing you to be consistent at that. I mean, Sasha McKenzie gave me years ago a great analogy, which I've used. And he talked about curling. Do you know, on the Winter Olympics, it's about the only time I'll ever watch this, but you're on ice, you've got the stone, and you'll see the curler. They have the stone, and then they're kind of slowly building up the speed of the stone on the ice, and then it's quite a long build-up, isn't it? And then they kind of let it go softly. So that the speed is built up over a long period of time, and there's very little like change in acceleration, because that exit speed of the stone is so critical to how far it travels. And if you had the extreme of maybe Lydia's profile, that type of profile, it's like Vic stood here with the stone going and then letting it go. Now, if you're really talented, you could probably control that, you know, the speed of that release. If you're not, maybe that could be harder, that yep, mechanism. So, like I said, you get outliers, you get people who'll do it in a way that you think, well, that's not the, the easiest way to do it. And, you know, for me, I would definitely have a preference as a coach for, you know, more like speed's profile, where there's less acceleration in around impact, just by virtue of seeing so many great putters actually do that without, you know, they just, however they've learned it, it's part and parcel of what they do, just because I think it's potentially easier to control speed.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, there's so many opposites in golf, right? And for amateurs when they're learning it. And if I sat down those same 10 people and I asked them, look, do you want to take it back a little shorter and longer through so you're accelerating, or do you want to take it back a little longer through so it almost feels like a slight decel? And, you know, 8, 9 out of 10 would say you want to accelerate, right? You want the 1 to 2. And then you start, and again, it can all be different. It can all work. But teaching the masses over the years.
Well, they've been told that for the last 20, 30,
right,
40 years,
right, haven't they? Right, yeah, so, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I'm not blaming them. It's like it's our own industry's fault.
We're guilty.
But when you get them up, this is a really fascinating thing with putting, and you teach putting at a much higher level than I do. But it's really interesting when you teach them this, because it's amazing how much more solid they hit at number one.
Yeah.
Like, they don't hit it low in the face as much. I feel like they don't hit as much. It doesn't spray around as much. I feel like it really gets tighter to the center. And the word that I hear is it feels like I'm hitting down a little bit. And they're not, but they're hitting more down than they probably were. But it does feel, it feels a little more down. But it's amazing how, like, the ball comes off that face on and just is rolling so true. And they just look at you, and it's like this aha moment of, oh, okay, so it's a little longer, shorter. I've got to put a little more speed into the putter head this way. That makes sense. And it's just, I got to tell you, like, that helps so many people. And I'm not saying it's for everybody, but it helps so many amateurs do so many things. Center contact, get it online, distance control improves because that putter head is moving at a more consistent pace. The brain's getting good feedback all the way through, and it's an aha moment. It's cool when the lights start coming on through this change from, you know, shorter to long. And it's interesting. It's like I'm trying to take it back really slow, low, you know, and then you know, hit the gas, bah, versus, you know, energy, and then it almost feels like a pop, but it's not, you know, but it's a little more abbreviated. That end point has more representation. It feels lower. Man, it's awesome to see the light go on.
Yeah, and I think you can make some big gains technically through just helping a player's rhythm and timing, you know, so controlling acceleration, you know, inadvertently matching up, you know, swing length, rhythm and timing. And we from the other parts of the swing how important rhythm and timing and sequence is. It's like the glue that holds together the mechanics. So there's a lot that you can improve just by helping a player's acceleration profiles and, their rhythm and timing. It's how you're applying force. So, you know, if you're trying to apply force really late, a lot of things can go wrong. So very often you'll see, like, when someone's very slow and short, I'll see, like, they really, like, start applying speed on the downswing, and then how they do it, they start to lose face angles and various, you know, things happen. And you type, like you said, you improve their rhythm, tempo, how they, you know, just through the concept alone, and the movement can change, be more efficient. So, you know, I would second that for sure.
All right, we're going to finish up some buzzwords here. First off, just tell my audience about your academy and how they can access you long distance, because I know not everybody lives right next to you over there in Europe.
Yeah, luckily, with the weather we've got at the moment. So basically we have an online academy, which we set up a couple of years ago, that the pandemic and having some time at home kind of really helped me and my team put this together. We'd had an idea of doing something, we just never had the time to do it. So it's philkenyonputting.com. It's an online academy which is aimed at the average golfer, anyone who's just kind of keen to improve their putting. You can go through a tailored assessment. We'll direct the most relevant videos for you. The videos are based around 7 themes of putting, what we call the putting elements. And we've got a drill section, a performance practice section where you can track all your stats, quantify various aspects of your practice. I've enjoyed putting that together. We've had some great feedback from our members, the community that we've created in there. So if anyone was interested in that, that's philkenyonputting.com.
All right, let me throw some buzzwords at you in putting, okay? And then you can, whatever comes to your mind, just give me the cliff notes on what it means to you, if anything, at all. Mm-hmm. Here's the first one. Release it in putting. What does that mean?
So you can release it in plane, you can release it about the plane, you could release it out of plane. So when someone says release, it could mean one of three things for me. So if you think about the shaft, so that's the shaft. And if you're looking sort of face on from caddy view, the putter's sort of swung this way, isn't it? Well, rotation that way would be in plane release. If I was to twist the shaft, that could be rotation about the shaft, that's a release. Or you could even release the lie angle. So yeah, release could mean one of three things.
So the toe crossing the heel would be kind of this, would be more of this release this way.
Like about the shaft release, yeah.
Okay. Because if it went this way,
that's releasing the loft.
That's releasing the loft.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other way would be this.
Lie angle.
I see from time to time, you see the block and rock, right? Like you see the, where you get in there and it's you get that going, right? Where you kind of, you back up, the spine backs up, head.
Yeah.
So it's almost like I'm not releasing this way or that way, really. I'm kind of just hanging on, right, and backing up this way rather than staying more centered and letting it kind of turn the corner per se, right? Where you see a lot of players, doing that front foot forward drill so they don't so they don't back up, right? You like players to stay very kind of steady with the head as the putter head's passing and not backing up.
Well, I think that, a lot of head movement, I think, can come from your body movement. So, like, what you were doing there was demonstrating side bend. So, like, your forward swing would have more side bend than sort of rotation, per se. So, symmetry of movement. If someone's got, a particular backswing and then side bends on the bolter and the head's going to move, what's the effect of that on how the club moves? There are players who have head movement. There are players who have very little head movement. Typically, the players that have very little head movement don't move their torso that much. So if you look at Tiger, like we talked about how still his head is, Tiger's kind of more hands and arms. Doesn't move his torso a great deal. And a good way to look at see a player's synchronization is to watch them hit really long putts. Then you'll start to see how they synchronize the different segments. It's kind of lost on smaller mid-range putts at times. We'll go and watch a player hit a long putt, and you will see how they synchronize the sequence of it, the range of motion across those different segments. It will be more easily demonstrated.
So release is those three movements.
Well, that's what I would think about.
That's what it means to you, right? Yeah.
Absolutely to me, yeah.
Tempo.
So tempo to me would be the speed of something. That's what I would look at tempo. I mean, tempo, I think, again, what it means to me, you often hear like tempo, timing, rhythm used like synonymously. Like tempo would be the speed of something. Is it like upbeat? Is it slow?
Right.
Is it quick? And then like the rhythm is that would be the ratio. I would say the rhythm then would be the ratio between, say, the backswing and then the downswing or any other segment.
What's the most under-discussed part of putting, Phil, in your opinion? Like, is it – I've heard teachers answer this different ways. I've heard some teachers talk about, like, the transition is under-discussed, how the putter head transitions on the downswing. And, like, is there a part of the setup? Because we exhaust – look, I mean, it's easy to talk about the setup, right? It's easy to talk about the grip. It's form alignments. And we talked about ratio. We were talking about tempo or – the path is moving on an arc and the face needs to be looking down the line. Like things I think a novice could look at and say, okay, those things kind of, you know, make sense and that's important, right? But is there something that, you know, actually these are a couple other things that mean something to you that seem to be a bit under discussed?
I don't know really. I mean, that's a difficult question. I mean, like, there's a lot of things discussed about technique. I mean, too much of it's conceptual.
Yeah.
Theory and, you know, model like. I don't think we look in depthly enough at, like, the individual patterns of players. But I guess one thing that isn't discussed enough is like more like skill acquisition. If you putting's a skill, it's not a technique. So you've got to start a ball on line, control your speed, really green. You know, two of those skills are not 100, you know, not reliant on technique or how you grip it or whatever. And you could argue like putting's a fine motor skill, and you really just got to be able to control the club face, hit out the middle. Now, and it's a very fine motor skill. There's a variety of ways that you can do that. How do you train someone to be skillful? Now, there's a variety of different techniques you could acquire to be skillful, but how do we train skill? How do people acquire skill? You know, why was Jack Nicklaus so good? You know, why was Jim Furyk so good? Why Tiger so good, and then you've got someone else with a very different technique, like Lauren Roberts. Why was he so good? So we look at techniques. It's easy to look at techniques, but I think we've probably got to look deeper than that and look at skill acquisition and how we train those skills. And that's beyond technique, like green reading, depth perception, speed control, those things. So those are the, if you look at the best putters and the best athletes, they have those skills, you know, but we look at them and think, well, what technical similarities do they have? Trying to find the answers in technique, you know, and it doesn't lie in technique, it lies in skill.
All right, last one, ball position. What do you like to generally there? Like, you know, I know that'll fluctuate player to player, perhaps on the type of stroke they have, but, you know, it seems like most are a little forward of center, weight maybe a little forward. Where do you tend to gravitate?
Well, I think, you know, ball position is going to be individual just on the basis of, like, a player's eye dominance, a player's, you know, angle of attack, a player's bias, like pull-push bias, rate of closure, things like that. So you've got those aspects that you're trying to fit in. If you look at like the kind of non-negotiables in a way, you don't want to be hitting down on it, and you know, and you've got to hit the ball, you know, out of the middle. You don't want to be hitting too high or too low on the face. So if you look at the average depth of a putter, the depth of a ball, and you know what you're trying to do in terms of the spin loft. You want to hit the ball with a positive angle of attack, so therefore ball position needs to accommodate that. So if it's helping a player aim, it's helping a player match player's rate of closure, and it's helping them hit it out of the middle with a positive rise angle attack, then wherever that ball is, it works. And then it's about being consistent in the application of that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, jet ball position tends to be kind of forward of, you know, more towards the left eye than the right eye for most players for those reasons.
Oh, it's good stuff. I mean, I could ask, you know, 100 more questions on all that. I'll finish with this last one. It's interesting. I've been in the business probably 22 years, probably about the same amount of time you have. And at that time, it was almost like left hand low was, man, if you went left hand low, you don't know how to putt. Right? Yeah. It was like, that was a stigma. I remember when I was in college, I putted way better left hand low. I was like, I don't care. Like, this is how I'm putting left hand low. I hit it way more solid, comes out online. I got better distance control. This feels loose to me. Anyway, now that's norm. I mean, left hand low is taught in many ways to new players. But now we see, you know, you've got all this different applications of the trail hand. And then when that came out, I was like, whoa, that guy probably had the yips. Like, you know, no, just, you know, Chris DeMarco and Mark Calcavecchia did pretty good with it, right? When they first started doing it, and then other guys started doing it, and they filled up doing it. Is there a style you think coming that we haven't seen yet? Is there anything that you kind of like, man, I wonder if someone could grip it like this or put their arm like this? Or, you know, I remember Briney Baird, you know, I loved it. His left foot, he had his right foot back, you know, and he was kind of standing on his left foot and hitting putts this way. And, you know, just the courage that took just to take that out there. Is there a crazy practice style that's like, wow, when I do this drill, I hit it so good, or this grip or this elbow? Is there anything that we might see in putting in the next 5 to 10 years, like we've seen that growth over the last 20?
I'm sure there's a style or a grip that we've not seen that we will see at some point. I think that's the pretty cool thing about putting.
Yeah. You
know, because I think we're not so, you know, we're looking at things outside of those models that we had 20 years ago and appreciating little nuances and individual aspects. I think one particular grip which you don't see. So you go left hand low, but your trail hand is giving you some issues. Okay, then you go claw. Well, going claw left hand low is quite difficult. Okay, so how do we then take that trail hand out but maintain the kind of left hand low feel? So I'm gonna have to get a putter here for this.
Okay, so you're saying claw with the right, left hand low.
Yeah. So
whoa.
Well, if I was gonna go claw,
that doesn't feel half bad.
So this would be my option. Okay. So I would have left hand low and then this hand kind of wedged in, and I'd have my back of the palm of the hand kind of pushed into the grip, and I'd be applying force into that side of the grip, the left side of the grip. And then at the same time with my hand, I'd be pushing the grip. I'd be pushing my hand into my forearm just to lock things out. So with that trail hand, you've gotten the forces away from the target. It's being pushed into the back of the grip. It's not, you're not applying any force to the target. So that would be a grip that I've not seen used. But I messed around with that as an option for someone who was left hand low, had a trail hand yip, and wanted to kind of adopt something that gave him the same sort of feel.
I'm with you. Yeah. I'm going to practice that because I like that left-hand low feel. I like the braced, more braced but light with the arms and hands. They're not rigid, but I don't like neutral. I like a little forward. And I'm gonna try that out. Phil, thank you. I can't thank you enough for the time. I know you're a busy man. Happy holidays to you. And great stuff with all your players. Matthew Fitzpatrick, who won the US Open, I know you work with as well. I had Sasha on actually. We talked speed training and a lot of the things that's happening there. And he's a wonderful putter. Done a nice job with Max. So it's cool to like work with these guys, but I'm sure then it's cool to see, oh wow, these guys are winning too, and they're getting better with their craft, which has got to make you feel good.
Yeah, no, it's the best job in the world, isn't it? For me to, when I set out as a boy, like in golf, I wanted to be a player. And when I finished university, I aspired to be a professional. So to end up like coaching and then, just being in golf, I was never good enough, but just to end up working in golf and then coaching and then having the opportunity to share the experiences with, players like this, it's dream come true, really. So still pinch myself every day that I get to do it. I feel very blessed.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Phil Kenyon. Appreciate you joining the Stripe Show podcast. We'll do it again next year.
Yeah, cheers, Travis. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Phil.
Pleasure.
That was good.